So this is November 13th or thereabouts. So today I'd like to pick up discourse number 22, so I'll read that to you. It goes like this. Someone said, the supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom Buddha sat in the place of practice for 10 kalpas. But the Dharma of the Buddhas did not appear before him, and he was unable to complete the Buddha way. I do not understand what this means. Would the master be kind enough to explain? And I'll just read you a little bit of what Lin Chi says. Lin Chi said, supremely pervading refers to you yourself who, wherever you are, understand that the 10,000 things have no innate nature and no characteristics, hence the name supremely pervading. Surpassing wisdom means that at all times and places one never doubts, never thinks one has gained a single thing, hence the name surpassing wisdom. Buddha refers to the cleanness and purity of the mind whose shining brightness penetrates throughout the Dharma realm, so it gets the name Buddha. And then I'll read you the rest later. He says, so it gets the name of Buddha, sitting for 10 kalpas in the place of practice, refers to the 10 paramitas. So Lin Chi's description here is quite simple, clear, and it directly confronts the doubt of the questioner. Although the supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom Buddha way is a quotation taken out of the context, taken out of context from the Lotus Sutra, the monk asking it is showing us his mind, and in fact is showing us our minds at a particular point of practice. He is saying, here I am. It is the sixth day of another session, maybe my 10th session, maybe my 100th session, and yet, here I am again. I am diligent and steadfast in all my activities, just like the young Lin Chi. And the teacher has encouraged me, chastised me, and spurred me on. And yet, there is at bottom a sense for the questioner that something might be innately wrong, fundamentally flawed and broken within him. This is a painful place to be in, frightening and sad both. The doubt is that all things might have Buddha nature, except me. There's a great doubt here, and in current psychological terms, we might say a shame. Shame is the experience of feeling bad and wrong from the very beginning. The message had been that at the core, there is something broken, something wrong. And this early wound can flare up with a meditation practice, especially with Zen meditation, where there are many opportunities to interpret circumstances in a negative way. However, a great healing can happen in meditation because we cannot run toward our normal diversions and self-soothing behaviors while practicing, especially during session. We eventually have to turn back towards ourselves. Initially, this can be horribly frightening, but with companions surrounding us, with sutras and incense, with bows and meals, with gulls, eagles, and robins, and with a container as vast and boundless as a clear autumn sky, and a schedule as tight as sesshin, we can be held and then experience our own brokenness. Brokenness not because we are bad, worthless, or no good, but brokenness because we are human, because we have skin and bones and heart. We each have that fissure, that broken apart place, and it can feel awful and utterly vulnerable, thus frightening. But it is that fissure or brokenness that allows the light of day to come in, which illuminates the vast mystery of our hidden interiors. And often it is in those recesses where our true treasure lays, hidden from others, but also hidden from ourselves. So by allowing the light into our mystery, by allowing it to shine on our treasure, the inverse occurs. Our mystery or uniqueness or talent are lighted and begin to cast their light, our own light, out into the world, allowing others to be truly touched, no longer by what we show, but by what we are becoming, ourselves. So this can be a lonely process and quite frightening, but do not let it be an excuse or a distraction. This crack is a portal into an ever-deepening realm of practice. Stay with Mu. Stay with each sound. Otherwise, the process is thwarted. Meditation becomes simply self-absorption and self-indulgence. It becomes ultimately another narrative about personal specialness. Stay with your practice. Make whatever comes up, whatever conditions and circumstances, make that into practice. Because it is within our conditions and circumstances, any conditions, no matter how painful, that we find freedom. At another time and in another place, a monk we meet in case 9 of the Gateless Gate said to Qingzhang, he said, the supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom Buddha sat in the place of practice for 10 kalpas, but the Dharma of the Buddha did not appear before him, and he was unable to complete the Buddha way. Why was this? Qingzhang said, your question is exactly to the point. The monk said, but he did Zazen on the Bodhi seat. Why couldn't he attain Buddhahood? Qingzhang said, because he is a non-attained Buddha. This final response by Qingzhang harkens back to Lin Qi's response in Discourse Number 21, when being asked about Bodhidharma's purpose in coming from the West. Lin Qi said at one point in the dialogue, attainment is non-attainment. That three-letter prefix, non, is the key to the 21st discourse and also to this case number 9 and to the present discourse. Non means the reverse of. But in this situation, it is not the reverse of attainment, which would be not attainment. It is the reverse of the duality paradigm. It is the reverse of attainment, not attainment. the non jumps clear of the role of opposites and resolves what seems like an entrenched system. And yet, at the same time, it doesn't set up another dichotomy. The inception of quantum physics did not create an opposite to Newtonian physics, it included it. The non of non-duality includes the duality. Non-duality is before and after duality. It is before good and bad, before thought and no thought, before even delusion and enlightenment, but it also includes them. I am miscasting a phrase of Dogen's here, but maybe we can say the world, the myriad things are emptiness leaping out of itself. And with realization, we begin to see the world of duality through the eyes of emptiness. However, we do not transcend duality, ever. There is, however, a realization of duality within duality. Emptiness is in this world of duality, but not of it. But we, you and I, are always of this dual world and in this dual world. This is a very different perspective than the Christian saying, he is in this world, but not of it. Again and again, there is the admonishment in the Zen world to come down from the 100-foot pole, to come back from the mountaintop, because those places have no bones, skin, or hearts. Our way is in the world. Our way is of the world, and our way is as the world. So I'd like to read you again. So this monk asked about the supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom. And Lin Shi said, supremely pervading refers to you yourself, who wherever you are, understand that the 10,000 things have no innate nature and no characteristics. Hence the name, supremely pervading. Surpassing wisdom means that at all times and places one never doubts, never thinks one has gained a single thing. Hence the name, surpassing wisdom. Buddha refers to the cleanness and purity of the mind whose shining brightness penetrates throughout the Dharma realm. So it gets the name Buddha. Sitting for 10 kalpas in the place of practice refers to the 10 paramitas. And then it just goes on. I'll read you the rest of it and then come back to that sentence. The Dharma of the Buddhas failing to appear before his eyes refers to the fact that the Buddha by nature is not subject to birth, and the Dharma by nature is not subject to extinction. How then could it be the kind of thing that appears before one? So I'd like to conclude the talk focusing on that one line. Sitting for 10 kalpas in the place of practice refers to the 10 paramitas. Thich Nhat Hanh translates the place of practice as the place of enlightenment. So sitting for 10 kalpas in the place of enlightenment refers to the 10 paramitas. Ruth Fuller Sasaki translates it as, he did zazen on the Bodhi seat. So sitting for 10 kalpas, he did zazen on the Bodhi seat. And that refers to the 10 paramitas. So however this is translated, the paramitas are primary. They are the practice place, the Bodhi Mandala. In Song of Zazen, Hakuin says, "Oh, the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise, devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas all have their source in Zazen." So are Lin Chi and Hakuin saying the same thing? All have their source in Zazen. "He did Zazen on the Bodhi tree" refers to the 10 paramitas, where he did Zazen under the Bodhi tree, or on the Bodhi seat. So are they saying the same thing? Their minds seem very close. Both are saying Zazen is not just about sitting on the cushion. It has other very important implications. But it seems to me Lin Chi is making an even more direct connection with Zazen and the paramitas. They are coterminous. One doesn't give birth to the other. I think Lin Chi points directly to the primacy of both and says each are woven into the fabric of your sitting place. Zazen is not true Zazen unless you rise from under the tree of enlightenment to find your friends. We have to get up, come down the mountain and be involved, but not involved in just any old way. We need to be involved within the fabric of the 10 paramitas. These paramitas then aren't just guidelines or a framework, and they aren't just rules. They, like Zazen, are the breath of our practice. Zazen includes the paramitas, and the paramitas include Zazen. One is the other side of the other, like right now's autumn is the front side of spring, winter, and summer. If the paramitas are outside us, if Zazen is outside us, then it isn't practice. It isn't Zazen. So this is a very important point that Lin Chi is making. We have to get up from our cushions. We have been told that many times. But we have to get up in a very particular way, or our place of practice may as well be on a 100-foot pole or on a distant cold mountaintop. So let me just tell you what the 10 paramitas are, and then I'll finish up this talk in a short manner. So the 10 paramitas, the other side of Zazen, are generosity, precepts, forbearance, zeal, settled focus meditation, wisdom, compassionate means, aspiration, power, and knowledge. So these paramitas cover a lot of territory, a lot of ground. In fact, they are the ground we stand and walk on, the ground we eat, sleep, and work on, the ground we live and die on. If we aren't encouraged and held by the paramitas, if we don't hold to the paramitas, then our sitting meditation is not Zazen, but a hobby. This hobby may create feelings of peace, calm, and contentment, all good things. But you are making meditation into an object for ultimately your benefit alone. So let Zazen, let the paramitas work on you. Let them fill you, even though you never can completely fulfill them. They are our aspiration and vow and they are too our great joy. So I'd like to end this talk with a reading from the Zen teaching of instantaneous awakening, translated by John Blofeld. A monk asks Wei Hai, by what means can the gateway of our school be entered? Wei Hai said, by means of the Dana Paramita. The monk said, according to the Buddha, the Bodhisattva path comprises 6 paramitas. Why have you mentioned only the one? So at the beginning there were 6, and then later on, Eiken Roshi says, with the beginnings of a decimal system and arithmetic system, it was made into 10 paramitas. So according to the Buddha, the Bodhisattva path comprises 6 paramitas. Why have you mentioned only the one? Please explain this one alone that provides sufficient means for us to enter. The teacher said, deluded people fail to understand that the other 5 all proceed from the Dana Paramita, and that by its practice, all the others are fulfilled. The monk asked, why is it called the Dana Paramita? The teacher said, Dana means relinquishment. And the monk asked, relinquishment of what? Hui Hai said, relinquishment of the dualism of opposites, which means relinquishment of ideas as to the dual nature of good and bad, of being and non-being, of void and non-void, of pure and impure, and so on. So this is the Buddha way the monk asked about. And this is our way, the way of Zazen and the Paramitas. And living within the fabric of Zazen and the Paramitas doesn't mean we won't be tossed about. And it doesn't mean we'll ever perfect them, or ourselves for that matter. For this is a process after all. It does mean, however, that the moonlight of our own minds and bodies will, when necessary, help us to cross the stream at night, even when the bridge has been washed out and the distant shore seems too incredibly far away. This is the Buddha way, and this is our way. Okay, thank you.